Well, I had an older gentleman tell me one time that there's three things in business that you can offer. That's quality, service, and price. And he told me that you cannot have all three.
The answer to last episode's trivia question is, at or above 900 degrees Fahrenheit, or in Celsius, 460 degrees. Hey guys, we'll get into the podcast in just a second. However, I'm looking for more great guests for the Blue Collar Voices show, and I've updated this older podcast with this announcement from November 2019. I am planning a road trip across America and including parts of Canada. I'll tell you more about both of these at the end of this podcast. Welcome everyone to the Blue Collar Voices show. Today our guest is Nathan Toomey. Nathan is the president of Gold Lake Glass, Little Falls Glass, and the Lakes Area Lock and Door. His company deals with windshield, storefront, glass replacement of any kind, and also lock and door hardware. Nathan, welcome.
Well, thank you, John. Appreciate you having me on the show today.
I'm absolutely delighted. So we're both on LinkedIn, and that's how I came across you. And you piqued my interest because your demographic and what you do fits this show so well of what I'm about. So what I noticed on your LinkedIn page, you've been doing this for a long time. How did you get started in this industry initially?
Well, originally I worked with my father throughout the summers doing construction work. And I had three older brothers that were in the construction business themselves. And of course, being the youngest of that group, I kind of got all the gopher jobs. So I decided that I wanted to try something different. And I went to work for a glass company here in the local area. And I was only his only one employee for about 3 or 4 years. And at the age of 14 is when I actually started in the glass business. And he decided he was going to close up, and so I wasn't real good in school, so that was something that I was kind of working full-time at. Well, when he closed up, I took off and went down to the Twin Cities and worked down there for 10 days. I never had moved out of the area, went from a town of about 10,000 people at that time down to, I don't know what the population was, but it took me like an hour to drive 10 minutes. And I thought, no way am I living down there. So I come back up and thought I could do some of them smaller jobs. And that's what I started out doing, is fixing screens and storm windows, and took that knowledge I had learned from the previous owner and went out from on that. And it's been great ever since. Been lots of hours and good employees that are now working for us. So got a nice business going.
That's awesome. I don't remember now. I saw it on the LinkedIn page. You mentioned how many employees you had.
Yeah, right now we have around 20. We're always looking for more. Our business is growing, and it's in the last year, it's been exceptionally well. We've had a lot of good work, and I owe that a lot to what the economy is doing and our president.
Well, I'm definitely with you on that. So over the years that you've been doing this, I'm sure you've seen things come and go, and the business has, I'm sure that years have been tougher than others. What is the one thing that you offer with your business that has helped you succeed and keep staying in business?
Well, I had an older gentleman tell me one time that there's three things in business that you can offer. That's quality, service, and price. And he told me that you cannot have all three. If you're going to base your business on pricing, somewhere along the line, your quality is going to suffer or your service is going to suffer. So our motto has been quality and service, and everything else has fallen in behind. So I would have to say that just can't base it on price alone.
I would absolutely agree with that. And have you ever heard of Seth Godin?
I have not.
He talks about the problem with the race to the bottom is you might win.
Oh, sure.
And that's typically talking about pricing. I'm going to be the cheapest. I'm going to be the cheapest. I'm going to be the cheapest. And you absolutely can get there, but you'll not succeed. You won't be able to continue if that's what you do.
I wholeheartedly believe that.
So you talked about the fact that you started this when you were 14 years old, when you first initially made your foray into the glass world. And it looks like on LinkedIn that you were about 17 when you actually started this particular company.
Correct.
How have you, other than just providing good service and word of mouth, what other ways have you grown your company?
Well, I'll tell you what, I think it's been just a lot of it's just you do what you say you're going to do, and you follow through with what you say. And again, you provide that good service to them customers, and it returns. Word of mouth is your number one sales technique, and that's what we've based our business on, is word of mouth and providing an excellent job to somebody.
Well, that is absolutely outstanding. That's the right way to do things. So when you first started, you would have been very hands-on. How do you break your duties down now? And if you've transitioned, how did that transition? Tell me a little bit about how that transition happened, how you would transition from being hands-on to having a crew and that shift.
Well, really, nothing has changed from the time I've started. I've hired good people to take care of, certain aspects of the business. But I guess a typical day for me is I wake up about 2 o'clock in the morning or so. I'm ready to go to work by 5, 6 o'clock. I get to the shop. I put a couple hours in at the shop itself, doing paperwork, sending out estimates, so forth like that. And then from there, I head out to the field with the guys, and that's where I like to be. And so typical day, I'm home by 6 o'clock at night, regularly, sometimes sooner than six, but I'd like to put in a good day's worth of work and I've just been doing what I've been doing pretty typically the same since I've started in business.
That is a long day. How many hours of sleep do you normally get?
Good sleep, couple hours, probably 6 hours, 7 hours maybe. So, I get my sleep in. I go to bed fairly early.
That's pretty good. I have to have about 8 myself, just saying.
Sure. I know my family doesn't appreciate me waking them up early in the morning and asking them what time they're heading to work.
Do your sons work for you as well?
Well, that's what's kind of nice. I'm starting to get to that time in my life and my age that the second generation is starting to come in. And my oldest son, Abraham, is coming in and starting to take some of the responsibilities that go along with owning a business. And he's going full forward and doing an awesome job. And same with my other boy, Sam, that is running the lock and key business, doing an excellent job there. Both the boys kind of got thrown into it, technically at a young age, of being involved with a family business. And of course, my wife has been there putting up with the times that I don't get home on time for supper, and I'm eating a cold supper. Although that's not very often, because she makes sure that it is warm. So, been pretty fortunate as a family to have everybody pretty well involved, and they get to see what I do. So, same with my girls. They're all hardworking kids. So I can't say more than enough about my family.
Much respect to you for making that happen, because it takes strong leadership to make all of those things come together the way they have.
I was going to say the other thing is that, you know, every one of the people that work for us are just, everybody brings their own special uniqueness to them, to the company. Some obviously are better at other things than others, and we try to work them towards that. But we got an excellent crew of employees, and I don't really call them employees because they technically become part of the family, and we want them to be part of the family.
That's a really good attitude. I think that that's missing from a lot of companies where they just look at people that come to work for them as expendable. And I like the fact that you are really, really in a way adopting them. That's pretty cool.
They do a lot for us. So it's one nice way to be able to reward them is they also allowed me to do that if my children had something going on that my employees took the next step or initiative to cover for me while I was gone for a few hours, and we can sure do the same for them. So we always encourage them to make sure they attend their kids' functions or sporting event or whatever it is. So like I say, I can't say enough good about the employees. So
that is fantastic. That is absolutely great. So taking a look at, say, more of the building type of things, what's some of the, say, a large project that you've worked on, something that might be memorable?
Oh, a memorable job for me. I look back, and this was like 23 years ago. We did a project here right locally, little over $1 million for us when we were all said and done. And in that, before that, I don't think we had done a project that was over $25,000. And I think I was right around 25 years old doing the project. Of course, I had some sleepless nights, and of course, I had to answer to quite a few bosses at that time, working with the construction company and the general contractor, and it was a project. It was an awesome project. Curtain wall, that's a big storefront or big tall glass windows that I'd never done a project like that before, and they gave me the opportunity to be able to do that job and give me a lot of confidence. And again, I hired on some quality people that had some background in that, and we moved forward and jumped in with both feet and took care of that job. And so that's kind of a, how would I say, my pride and joy of a job. So
that's good, and that's probably one of those things you have a little bit of trepidation, but you do it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Oh yes, by all means.
And then, after you completed that job, what kind of impact did that job have going forwards?
Well, that point on, I felt we could tackle on just about any project that was going to be completed locally, and again, it gave us the confidence to go after those jobs. And you know, I'm kind of a stickler on, you know, I do business locally and I support my community, and I would expect our other local businesses and people to support the local economy as well. And it's just like buy American, hire American, build American. This is the country we are, that built on the backs of a lot of people that have made the country what it is.
I so agree with you on that. I know that we have a lot of things that are manufactured overseas, and jobs have been shipped overseas. And sometimes we feel that it's better because we're getting goods at a cheaper cost, but the long-term effect is it's costing our economy, and it's costing us as a nation.
Oh, by all means, wages, everything. Yeah, there's products that they call throwaway products, and let's build a good quality product that we can continue to use years to come, and build it here, make it here. Our economy thrives on that.
Well, while we're talking about the economy, it seems that, well, there's several different ways we can go there. One, I hear that it's hard to find people to work in the trades, that it's very tough. Not just that there's not enough people, but that not enough people are actually going into this particular type, these types of industries. Have you seen any of that over in your area?
Oh, by all means. You know, by the town that we live in, our population, we're kind of limited with the workforce that we can get. Our local schools here, maybe 15 years ago, got rid of the vocational school, which is technically a trade school. It was the builders, the welders, you know, it was a trade school, vocational. It was bringing a good group of young men and women to the workforce that had some skill technically taught to them that we don't have that now. I know that the people that we hire, they don't come with experience, a lot of them, but we're willing to train them, teach them. And I think the glazing industry is a damn good life to be involved with, and it's good pay. At times it's stressful and it's strenuous, but it's you can make a darn good living. Some of the folks that we've hired over the years and that are obviously still with us, I think they're sure appreciative. They sure seem to be. Comes across to me that they are. Our overall workforce in our area, local area, our area is just booming in the last year and a half. And again, we're shorthanded for good qualified workers. And I think we need to bring back that trade school or offer something that can be a apprentice program through the businesses that are out there doing the hiring. And I think we can bring on a good workforce for the future to come.
Where are the people going to work at as opposed to the trades? What industry is sucking those people up?
Boy, in our area right now, again, the trades are strong. We're hiring. We're seeing the medical industry. Our local hospital here is can't hire enough people as well. Of course, people are getting older, so seeing the assisted living homes and so forth like that, there's just not enough of them. And of course, that takes tradespeople to build those buildings as well. So it goes hand in hand as far as what's happening. And I can just say that we need more tradespeople, knowledgeable, good tradespeople in the industry.
Are people just choosing to do other things besides the trades, leaving the trade with a gap?
Oh, I think they're choosing other things to do because I think there's been a lot of it that people been told that you need to be a computer programmer. You need to get a job with the government in order to have a good job. And that's, I think we've seen a lot of people head in that direction and go into that sector of work on false promises, to some degree. I guess I'm not sure really how to answer that properly without pissing somebody off. But I honestly don't.
You don't have to worry about pissing anybody off from my perspective. You just say what you think.
Yeah, well, I'll be very upfront. I don't think you need to go to college to get a degree, to get a good job. In some cases, if you're going to be a doctor or like that, by all means, I want the best of the best. Who's going to take care of me as far as a physician? I think a lot of these young kids have been led down a what would I say, a false trail that they need college. You don't need college to get a good job. You go out there, you work hard, you put your effort in, you do what you say you're going to do, and you will be rewarded.
I think there's some absolute truth to what you are saying. There are some jobs, there are some careers that need to have a specific course of study. Just like you mentioned, the doctor, if I'm going to have somebody working on my brain, I want somebody that has been vetted and absolutely is just superb at that. But if you're going to have somebody that is going to, let's say they are going to become a software programmer, they don't need to go to a 4-year degree in order to make that happen.
No.
And that kind of sidesteps a little bit the specific trades industry, but it does get into the fact that we have a lot of college debt and a lot of people going to college and they're expending an enormous amount of resources and funds for a return that doesn't warrant that.
By all means. You imagine starting out $100,000 in debt in your life, and I think, honestly, a lot of these young kids, before they go into college, I think they should go out and work 2 years in the workforce. Same like I think that everyone that comes out of high school should either spend a couple years in the military as well, whether you're a woman or a man, or provide something with the Peace Corps. I'm not sure, but I think every kid should donate some of his time and provide a return to the people of the United States, whether it's military or whatever. But, you know, that's a personal feeling, and I'm sure some people don't agree with me, but that's okay. I don't agree with them either.
And that's okay. You and I might not even agree on everything. But the aspect of, if they do go into Peace Corps, if they do go into the military for 2 years, what you're doing is you're kind of reshaping your worldview. And that's also something that we should do in school. This is something that we don't teach in. We don't have that concept. We don't have that vision that people are given in school. And I don't think that school should be the end all to end all. I think that a lot of responsibility comes down to the parents. But outside of that, everything is pushed in school to more schooling. It's turned into its own little, you know, like they have the industrial military complex. It's almost like the educational complex where it's self. It's trying to protect itself and grow itself. You know
yes.
what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. You know, as if we can, you know, it's like if the medical industry, if we can keep people sick, that's going to guarantee that we're going to have a job. You know, if I was a doctor, and yeah, I'm supposed to go there to make everybody feel good, but they keep pushing all these pills on a person that this pill does this to them, but you'll have the side effect for that. So now I can give you another pill to fix that side effect. And I'm not saying anything bad about the medical industry. By all means, I'm not. But, you know, if they can, well, government's the same way. The more people that we can have on welfare and getting public assistance and guide them to be able to go to get public assistance, that justifies their job, why they're there. And then they ask for more money, and it's a never-ending situation. So
I think we could sit down over maybe some iced tea. I'm not much of a beer guy, and we could have us a really good conversation.
Well, I would like to invite you up to Brainerd, Minnesota. I'm actually part owners of a little microbrewery here in Brainerd. There's a group of us that are all partners in on it, and it's called Roundhouse Brewery, and we got some fantastic beer. So you're more than welcome to come up, and I'll buy you a growler.
You know what? I am going to endeavor to take you up on that. I don't know when, but that is one of the things that I'm going to endeavor to do.
Awesome.
So I like the fact that you've you know, you really worked hard and you have grown your business and you've done it through hard work and perseverance. And over time, you know, you've told me that a lot of the way you've grown is it comes across as just word of mouth, but how do you, or how have you from back then till today, how do you typically find your customers, like new customers?
New customers, I got to tell you, it's word of mouth. And again, we come from a population town of here about 15,000 people during the summer, or full-time residents. And then our population in the summertime goes up to, you know, 100,000. So we got a lot of people moving in from the area. We're kind of a resort industry area. Thank goodness for the resort people. They've put a lot of young people to work during the summer and provided them with summer jobs. I forgot what the hell the question was.
Just how do you find new customers?
Oh, there we go. All right. Sorry about that. Anyway,
that's okay. This is great. This is all good, man. It is all great.
All right. Basically, again, new customers comes from the work we've done for Mary Jane down the road or John Doe up the road. My customer base are my salespeople. My employees are our salespeople by how they conduct themselves through their friends. I'm not much of an internet guy. I'm not much for the social media or anything like that other than LinkedIn. I get a little boisterous on there. So other than that, again, I honestly got to tell you, it's word of mouth. Doing a good job.
That's great.
And I believe our employees see that as well. So,
well, from today, let's say looking out towards the future, you're kind of bringing in that second generation. And roughly, when do you think that you might start phasing out? How big do you want to grow your company? What's some of the goals you might have?
Well, as far as growing the company, you know, I want it to continue to grow. If we continue to do what we're doing, we're going to stay the course. We're going to continue to grow. The next generation coming in, my boy does things a little bit different than I do, or my kids do things different than I do. And that's hopefully I've given them the basic guidance as well as their mother has to succeed, to continue on the next phase of life for myself and for them as well. I don't ever see myself retiring, but I do see myself not making the decisions anymore. That can be up to them and how they want to run it. It's kind of similar to my dad. When he retired when he was about 58 years old, turned it over to my other two brothers. I broke my leg playing softball and asked him if he'd come down and help me out while I was recovering from a broken leg. And, geez, I got to work the next 25 years with my dad.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, so I would never pass that up in the world. He was one of the most dedicated people working at the shop. He was there at 8 o'clock in the morning and there at 5 o'clock at night and did his own thing. And if people came in and started asking him questions, he would just turn around and say, well, you'll need to talk to that guy there. He's the boss. So hopefully my kids will, you know, accept me still working down there, and hopefully I can say something once in a while and not get hollered at. No, I'm kidding.
Are you a reader?
No, I not much of a reader. you know, they made the comment today regarding about my wife took a picture of me reading the newspaper, an actual printed newspaper. She put that on social media, I believe, and said, "You sure don't see this very often."
No, you don't. It is interesting how things have changed so much so quickly. And, you know, you see people reading on the, I'm an IT, like I said, you know, I'm an IT guy, I'm a tech guy, and I do everything on my phone, on my computer. I love to read, but I don't carry, I don't walk around with books. I walk around with my phone.
Oh, see that all the time. Yeah. Yeah. And if that's the way that, if that's the way the technology is going, that's good for the next generation. I'm looking to go out in the fishing boat when I have time and sit back and have a beer and enjoy myself when that time comes.
Well, you're up in the land of a thousand lakes, aren't you?
Yeah, we have a few here. The thing about
yes,
it is,
you do.
Yeah, what's funny about it is we have people that travel to our area to go fishing, and then us locals turn around and head farther north to go fishing, so... And we have some.
Are you transferred?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead, sir.
You know, I was going to say, so we technically become a tourist and head farther north and go and enjoy some of the other local areas of Minnesota. So,
have you ever been out on any of the Great Lakes?
I have. Lake Superior. Good fishing out there. Lake's a little scary to me. Most of the lakes that we fish on around here are a couple hundred acres to 1,500 acres. So I enjoy the smaller lakes. It's a little quieter. Seems a lot safer.
I had read that the Great Lakes, when there's a storm, they are dangerous, so dangerous. And that there have been many, many ships lost out there.
Oh, many ships up on Lake Superior. The and a lot of people who use the lakes for their livelihood, whether it was fishing, netting, shipping, have lost their lives on Lake Superior. You go up to Duluth, Minnesota, and you can read the history and see what the history of Duluth was about, and that was a shipping industry up there.
Well, I know that the whole area up there, that used to be, there was just a lot of manufacturing. Just, you know, we had, you know, the automotive industry. I did not know about the shipbuilding, but I just know that that was just the area. That's just where manufacturing was. And I'm reading that we're having some jobs coming back, like the iron industry. Mm-hmm. And are you seeing anything in your area?
We're seeing it. There's a copper mine that's going to eventually be opening up here soon. The Iron Range is coming back around. And just to clarify, Duluth, I don't believe they built ships up there. That was mainly a shipping and receiving area. So lots of coal went out of that area. We weren't producing the coal, but the trains were bringing the coal in and loading it on barge ships and going out from there. But a lot of taconite, the iron ore, we're seeing that come back. And again, I think a lot of it's got to do with just what's been happening here in the last couple of years. And hopefully we can keep that moving forward.
I absolutely agree. Nathan? I absolutely appreciate you so much taking the time to talk with everybody and to share a little bit about your story. And I just wish you great success. And if somebody wanted to contact you and have you do some work for them, how would they get a hold of you?
It's mainly by phone, 218-829-2881. Or we do have a website they set up there at, we have set up at the shop. You can contact us that way, but we're open to that initial phone call. And when you call our glass company, you will always get somebody to answer that phone. doesn't go into automation or anything like that. We're still old school up here.
Well, Nathan, thank you so much. We'll go ahead and wrap this up. And again, thank you so much for being on the show.
All right. Thank you very much, John. And God bless you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
Today's trivia question, how many men does it take to equal 1 horsepower? On our next show, we are speaking with Ethan, who runs a locating service.
The next morning, I jumped in the truck, the work truck, and away we went. It was actually that day I was working with the owner of that company, and I seen his invoice for the day, and I was completely blown away by how much he charged to do what we did. And it just completely blew me away. So I said, well, hey, if this guy can do that, I can do that, right? So
hey guys, before you go, two things. The first is I'm looking for more great guests for the Blue Collar Voices show. Basically, I'm looking for those that excel in the blue collar arena and have actually got their hands dirty, truly understanding what it is like to do the work. I realize this is an older podcast, but I'm updating this podcast in November 2019 for the announcement of an upcoming road trip. Phase one is building a list of locations to visit. Some locations will be just a meet and greet. Others will be on-site audio and or video. Please check out the website for more information. I'd love to hear from you. Email me at johnc@bluecollarvoices.com. You can also hit me up on LinkedIn. Thanks all. Looking forward to hearing from you. Blue Collar Voices is produced by John Chapman, and all audio, video, graphics are created and edited by John Chapman. Blue Collar Voices is a DR7 Media production.
I'll be back.